Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I have four words for you. Te quiero, Puerto Rico.
She loves you, Puerto Rico. Here's the new math of the Democratic presidential race. As closely as I can figure, now put away your slide rules for a minute and listen, I think I can do this simply. After the compromise Saturday on Michigan and Florida, the new total number of delegates needed to win the nomination is 2,118. Obama needs only about 47 more delegates to reach that goal. Clinton trails him by about 170 delegates. Now, tomorrow's primaries in Montana and South Dakota have only 31 delegates at stake. There are about 200 superdelegates who remain uncommitted. Now, what that means is that Clinton, trailing by 170, needs to convince almost every uncommitted superdelegate to vote for her. Very daunting math for Senator Clinton. Then there's this argument that Senator Clinton made in her Puerto Rico victory speech yesterday about the popular vote math.
We are winning the popular vote. Now there can be no doubt. The people have spoken and you have chosen your candidate. And it's important where we have won. We are winning these votes in swing states and among the very swing voters that Democrats must win to take back the White House.
So is Clinton really winning the popular vote? Well, as I understand it, she's only winning the popular vote if you count all her votes in Florida and Michigan and count Obama's Michigan total as zero because he wasn't on the ballot, even though about 40% voted uncommitted rather than choose Clinton. Clinton's math also gives Obama no popular vote in several caucus states that he won, but that did not report a popular vote total. But no matter how you slice it, it's been a very close election season with the delegate math remaining heavily in Obama's favor. So now what? With me now are Liz Halloran from U.S. News and World Report. And to talk about the Florida and Michigan compromise, we have Gordon Trowbridge, Washington reporter for the Detroit News, and Leslie Clark, national correspondent for the Miami Herald. Good morning to all of you. Thank you for coming on WNYC today.
Thank you, Brian.
Thanks.
Liz, first on the math, would you check my work? Did I get it about right, or
I'm cheating here, but you did get it correct. The one I'm looking at says that it is 2,118 delegates needed to win the Democratic nomination after the committee acted on Saturday to give delegations from Michigan and Florida representation. Obama right now has about, 271 delegates. There are a couple different counts out there, but he's got about 2,071 delegates. Clinton, 1,915.
So I want to replay, now that you didn't take your red pencil to any of my math, I want to replay the Clinton clip and ask you to take note of how strong a claim of national victory she actually made here in that Puerto Rico speech yesterday. Listen to this same clip.
We are winning the popular vote. Now there can be no doubt. The people have spoken and you have chosen your candidate. And it's important where we have won. We are winning these votes in swing states and among the very swing voters that Democrats must win to take back the White House.
The people have spoken and you have chosen your candidate. Did you hear that, Liz?
Brian, that is her argument to the superdelegates, that she has won in these swing states. It's an argument that involves the superdelegates changing their minds and flocking to her. She has made this popular vote claim for the last several weeks, but as you mentioned before, it does not count the caucus states that Barack Obama has won, and it counts Michigan votes where Barack Obama was not on the ballot. Now, they've also claimed that she has led in national matchups between herself and McCain. Now, Barack Obama also has polls that show him winning, so they've kind of backed off that one. But the question is, does that mean anything? Is that resonating with superdelegates? It doesn't seem to be. You don't win based on popular vote, even if you make this stretch that she's making. You win on delegates, and Barack Obama expects to have those wrapped up by midweek.
And back to the math for a minute. After the final votes are cast tomorrow in Montana and South Dakota, with only 31 delegates at stake, nothing much is going to change. But the voting will be over, so then the superdelegates could end it by declaring quickly after tomorrow, over the next few days, almost certainly clinching the 2,118 for Obama, because he will need only maybe 30 more out of 200 remaining superdelegates after tomorrow. So Clinton's job, I guess, is not to convince them to all go en masse to her right now, but to convince them to delay their decision, to just do nothing for a few weeks and let dust, if there is dust, settle in some way. Is that it?
That's part of it. You know, with Senator Obama finishing somewhat weakly in these last primaries, it's given her an opportunity to make this argument that we should wait and see. But many of her high-level supporters, including Don Fowler, who is an influential member of that Rules and Bylaws Committee that met on Saturday, said, let's unite and move on. Her national campaign co-chair, former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack, is among those saying the same. It's pretty clear. He says that Obama will secure the nomination. And I think that wait and see is being seen by most as damaging to the party. There was a lot of anger, I'm sure Gordon and Leslie saw on Saturday. And I think Howard Dean is really encouraging superdelegates to step forward. So is Nancy Pelosi and Harry. So are Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid.
And I want to bring in our patient guests in just a minute from Florida and Michigan. But where Clinton is right on the math is that since the Wisconsin and Hawaii primaries toward the end of February, she has won since then in delegates and in popular vote. So what she can make is a trend argument that since then, which is really, you know, before the Reverend Wright thing and before the bitter West Virginians clinging to their guns, et cetera, before that, he was winning. After that, she has won. So if she wants to try to make a trend vote, on that she has a statistical argument.
Still, though, I think Obama and his strategists really outsmarted Clinton tacticians because they used the Democrats' proportional distribution of state delegates in these primaries to target districts he could win. So that he won early, he's arguing, doesn't devalue his delegate count, mm-hmm. and she can make this later argument. But I think that the thought is that these superdelegates would have moved to her sooner, particularly after the Reverend Wright controversy.
All right, listeners, you want to chime in on this? You can, on any aspect of it. On the math, to be sure, one way or the other. Is that coming clear? Do any of you want to take your red pencils to how it looks to my calculator? Do you want to comment on our comments page? So go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, or give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Clinton supporters, do you want your candidate to continue to push this message of asking the superdelegates to delay after tomorrow, or what do you want? 212-433-9692. And let's bring in our friends from Michigan and Florida. After Saturday's compromise at the DNC Rules Committee, the more contentious one is the Michigan result, where the Clinton people are claiming that four delegates were outright stolen from them. So, Gordon Trowbridge from the Detroit News, explain the Michigan compromise, can you?
Sure. Based on the results of the January 15th primary, if those were given complete authority, Senator Clinton would have received 73 delegates, and another 55 would have been uncommitted delegates, essentially free agents. Senator Clinton was the only major candidate on the ballot. She's the only candidate that reached the threshold to win any delegates. Now, we know from exit polling and other information that many, if not most of the folks who voted uncommitted were Obama supporters. There is also the factor that about 600,000 people came out to vote in the Michigan Democratic primary, and based on turnout in other states, we know that that's a fairly low turnout, much lower than we would have expected based on what's happened in other states. So there were clearly a lot of people who stayed home because at the time it was believed that, or at least the DNC was saying, that Michigan's contest wouldn't count. So what Michigan Democratic leaders, there was a group of four neutral party leaders led by Senator Carl Levin, came up with a compromise that attempted to sort of take into consideration both the political factors and the weird voting on the ground. Senator Obama was saying you should split these delegates 50-50. There was no contest here at all. If they're seated, we should each get half of them. Senator Clinton wanted to get all 73 and to have the 55 delegates that were uncommitted be actually uncommitted. What the Michigan Compromise did is sort of split the baby in the middle. Senator Clinton would get 69 delegates. Senator Obama would get 55. He would get all, or 59 rather, all of the 55 uncommitted plus four delegates that otherwise would have gone to Clinton, as a way of recognizing the fact that he was not on the ballot and there was not, as Michigan leaders admit, it was a flawed contest.
Now, no one voted for Obama in Michigan. Clinton's name was on the ballot, and I think were a couple of other more minor candidates
exactly.
also on the ballot.
Exactly. Senator Dodd, Mike Gravel, and Congressman Kucinich were on the ballot. But the other major contenders, Obama, Senator Edwards, Governor Richardson, and Senator Biden, all removed their names.
So all of those removed their names, including Senator Edwards, who was getting, you know, a fair amount of third place votes mm-hmm. at that point, and Richardson was getting 5, 6, 7%, whatever, in most of the states. And yet all of those who didn't vote for Clinton per se are being imputed to Obama now, and he's getting all those delegates. How do they rationalize that?
Well, a couple of ways. One, all of the candidates who took their name off the ballot have either endorsed Obama or, in the case of Senator Biden, have edged right up to endorsing him. So if, in fact, we did divide those delegates based on if we knew which candidate each of those uncommitted voters actually supported, it's more than likely that Senator Obama would get those uncommitted delegates in any case. The other factor is that some of those delegates have actually been chosen. The complicated process that these various state parties use to pick delegates is partially complete in Michigan, and they've chosen 36 of the uncommitted delegates so far. 30 of those are confirmed Obama supporters, and another 6 are union members who almost certainly would follow the party's lead and support Senator Obama once he's pretty clearly the nominee. So to the extent that we know who those people actually are at this point, they are Obama supporters.
And Leslie Clark, national correspondent for the Miami Herald. How about the Florida Compromise? What is it, and why is it less contentious than Michigan?
I was going to say it's a lot less complicated than Michigan's, but I don't think from Florida's point of view it was any less contentious. Both candidates did appear on the ballot in Florida, though neither campaigned in the state. So Obama's campaign had been very resistant to have it counted. On Saturday, they agreed to what Robert Wexler, speaking for the senator, called an extraordinary concession in that he would agree to give Clinton a net of 19 delegates, which pretty much means that all of Florida's delegates will be seated, but they'll be given half a vote. The Clinton campaign had still opposed it, but I think they saw the writing on the wall that they were just not going to get it past the committee to get 100%.
Right. So Clinton keeps her margin of victory in Florida on a percentage basis with respect to the delegates there, but each delegate only gets half a vote.
Right.
So it's one person, one vote for other delegates at the convention, one person, half a vote for the Florida delegates.
Correct.
Now, Obama, I guess, feels he can be that magnanimous, if it is magnanimous, by conceding that 19-delegate margin to Clinton in Florida, because he feels he's going to win anyway. And I think that was on display in this clip. This is Obama speaking yesterday in Mitchell, South Dakota, after the results in Puerto Rico.
First of all, Senator Clinton is an outstanding public servant. She has worked tirelessly in this campaign. She has been a great senator for the state of New York, and she is going to be a great asset when we go into November to make sure that we defeat the Republicans. That I can promise you.
So Obama is talking as if he's won. And Liz Halloran from U.S. News and World Report, here's an interesting question from our comments page. It says, it looks as though if the decision had gone totally her way on Saturday, that Obama still would have been closer to clinching than she. She would still have made the popular vote argument, but would have been robbed of the issue to take to the credentials committee, the grievance, in other words, and he would have been able to go to the superdelegates and brag about how magnanimous he was. Why didn't they do that, asked this listener. It seems to me it could have been the ultimate jujitsu move.
You know, that's a very interesting comment, and it's one that sort of started to circulate last week or the week before, saying, you know, if the committee gives the Clinton camp everything it wants, they still won't have enough to put her in a position where she could overtake Barack Obama. And indeed, as the caller says or the emailer says, he could look magnanimous and move forward. However, the leaders of the party couldn't cotton to doing something like that, where they had set down this 100% penalty on Michigan and Florida. And if they had just wiped that off the books, I think, you know, they would have looked ridiculous in trying to say that rules are rules. I mean, even on Saturday, it's like rules are rules until they're not. But at least they did impose some penalty. But the emailer makes a very interesting point that others have made.
And it's not a caller or an emailer. It's a commenter on our comments page.
Oh, I'm sorry.
WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show for anyone else who wants to do that or read what other people are commenting on. And here's one from that very same comments page for you, Gordon Trowbridge from the Detroit News. Someone writes, there was a large block of delegates in Michigan that were officially uncommitted. I guess that's everybody who didn't vote for Clinton. They were electing delegates for uncommitted status.
Mm-hmm.
Are those same individuals now compelled to vote for Obama at the convention, or have they been replaced by Obama delegates?
Well, as I said, many of those 59 delegates have already, the 55 delegates, the uncommitted, have already been selected. We know that about 30 out of the 36 that have already been chosen are confirmed Obama supporters. As I understand it, and I think some of the details have to be worked out on this, there was a lot of conversation on Saturday for those who actually watched the seemingly endless proceedings about candidate right of approval. In the Democratic Party, a candidate gets to actually vet the people who run to be seated as delegates representing that candidate. So they get to sort through the list and say, this is a person we know who will vote for us at the convention, and they can serve, they can represent us as a delegate from that state. My understanding is that Obama at some point will get an opportunity to vet that list in the same way that Senator Clinton got a chance to vet her list of delegates when they were chosen earlier this year.
And the same listener asks, what happens to the delegates won by the other two Democrats on the Michigan ballot, Gravel and Kucinich? Oh, it's
there,
three.
There
really,
were no delegates. Under Democratic rules, a candidate has to receive at least 15% of the vote, either statewide or in a congressional district.
So nobody else actually
won. In order
won.
To win a delegate. And Clinton was the only named candidate on the ballot who did that.
And Leslie Clark from the Miami Herald, here's a question for you from our comments page, and it is, all of the Democrats were on the Florida ballot. What happens to the delegates that were pledged to candidates other than Clinton or Obama? Are they free to vote as they please? And might this change the eventual delegate count from Florida, however minimally?
I wouldn't expect it to change that much. John Edwards' delegates will get 14, or I guess 7 in a half situation.
Right, and that's just a handful of delegates. So they will vote for him on the first ballot. They are required to do that, and then if there's a second ballot, they can go how they want.
Correct.
Okay. Let's see. James in Manhattan wants to challenge the math and say Clinton may be actually doing better in the popular vote than we gave her credit for. Right, James?
Right. I used the New York Times numbers exactly as they had them, and I did give Obama 75% of the uncommitted in Michigan, because I think that's fair, because clearly, not all of the uncommitted at that point in January were for Obama. Edwards was still in the race, as was Richardson and Biden.
So using that math, that's fair.
I would give him 75%.
Okay.
I think that's fair, and it's an overwhelming number. So even if you do that, I come up adding up the New York Times numbers exactly as they are, and I've been updating all along. Obama is behind Clinton by about 118,000 popular votes. And the only reason why that matters, by the way, is because everyone is absolutely right, I think. It's the pledged delegates that count. However, the pledged delegates, everybody recognizes, are clearly not enough to secure the nomination. So it comes down to an argument to the superdelegates.
Right. And yet, on the math, just to complete that thought, the other point that the Obama people make is that he gets credit for zero delegates for a number of states that held caucuses where he won the caucuses, because the caucusing delegates were never reported as popular vote. There was no popular vote number.
Right, and that itself, quite honestly, to the people who are upset about the whole caucus situation, in and of itself, that is an argument against Obama, I believe, because the very fact that the popular vote was not recorded in these caucus states makes one very, very nervous, I think, in light of the history of elections in this country. You know, who's to say how many pledged delegates each candidate should have gotten if the party officials are reluctant to release the actual number of voters that participated in the caucuses. And as we all know, the caucus system was very skewed against the Clinton demographic in the end, because her voters are least likely to participate in caucus events, whereas his voters, and Texas is almost the picture case for it. I mean, Texas is like the, you know, that's the case for the against the caucus argument, because there you have her winning the primary vote by about 100,000 votes out of the several million cast. And by the way, Texas was an extremely high turnout. The turnout, if you use the Kerry numbers in the general election of 2004 mm-hmm. as your base, as a kind of indicator of what the turnout was, in Texas you had more people voted in the primary for Clinton and Obama combined than voted for Kerry. So it's about 105% or so.
Right. So it's good news for the Democrats that there's so much Democratic interest right now, because somebody's going to have to fight the November election.
And Brian?
Liz, he's got a point here that Texas, I mean, look, these rules were made before Clinton was in the race or Obama was in the race. These rules were made election cycles ago. So, you know, you can't say that they were set up to favor the Clinton people or the Obama people in any particular state. But there was both a caucus and a primary in Texas, and as a result, she won the popular vote, and he won more delegates, right?
Yes. I mean, he makes Clinton's case very well, and that's what they've been arguing. I just want to say one thing on the popular vote. There are a number, obviously, with everything involving this campaign, there are different numbers out there, but the sort of the Bible for a lot of political reporters and political people is a Real Clear Politics site I'm sure you've been to, and in your caller may want to check out. They still have Obama leading Clinton in the popular vote total by about, it looks like about 25,000 votes. With estimates from the caucus states, he leads her 48.2% to 47.8%. And then they do some other calculations you can go through and look. And under some of the calculations, she does lead him if they include some other estimates from, for example, out of Michigan. And so I think that popular vote most people agree at this point. Haven't seen the numbers he's talking about in the New York Times right now, but most people have agreed that Obama does have a very slim lead at this point if you don't count the disputed primary votes.
Did I hear one of you others wanting to chime in?
Yeah, Brian, there's a Real Clear Politics. Texas is one of the best places to go for this sort of information. There's another site called 538.com that has a spreadsheet right now that based on the various permutations, says there are 972 different ways to count the popular vote.
Right.
It's an enormously complicated thing, and since Michigan is such a big factor in that, the Obama people, I think, can, with some justification, argue that we can't know how Michigan would have actually voted if everybody had been on the ballot and there was a contest there. We are almost positive that turnout would have been higher, and looking at the demographics of the state, it's possible that Obama would have done significantly better if he'd had a chance to campaign there. So it's really kind of an unknowable.
And we thought 50 ways to leave your lover was a lot. we're just about out of time. I'm going to talk to Senator Frank Lautenberg next from New Jersey, but this from Politico.com this morning, another good politics site. It says Clinton camp converging on New York Tuesday and shedding staff. And it says members of Hillary Clinton's advanced staff received calls and emails this morning from headquarters summoning them to New York City Tuesday night. They announced, by the way, to us and to the other media that they will have an event tomorrow night after the final votes in Montana and South Dakota. And it will be here in her state of New York, and telling them, says Politico, that their roles on the campaign are ending. Two Clinton staffers tell my colleague Amy Parnes, writes Ben Smith on Politico. The advanced staffers, most of them now in Puerto Rico, South Dakota, and Montana, are being given the option of going to New York for a final day Tuesday or going home, the aide said. So, Liz Halloran, I don't know if you make anything of that.
Well, she'll be back here in D.C. after the primary. She's going to be meeting with her advisors and her husband. Obama is saying he's not counting on a concession speech, but there may be one on Wednesday. But everyone is waiting to see what Hillary does. There were tearful women outside the committee meeting on Saturday into the evening, and And the ones who weren't angry and on television cameras were standing back and saying, we've got to wait to see what Hillary does. We've got to see what Hillary does.
And
so
everyone
is waiting.
They are billing this tomorrow as an election night celebration with Hillary. And, of course, we will cover it here on WNYC. Liz Halloran, senior staff writer for U.S. News and World Report. Gordon Trowbridge, Washington reporter for the Detroit News. Leslie Clark, national correspondent for the Miami Herald. It ain't over till it's over, and it ain't over, huh?
No.
Exactly.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And next, we do turn to New Jersey, U.S. Senator Frank Lautenberg, who's got a primary of his own tomorrow.